Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got the Lorwyn Eclipsed Crash Course here. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Changeling Wayfinder Sachs. Ethan, your boy's back. This is a 3-mana, 1/2 shapeshifter with Changeling. When this creature enters, you can search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle. How do you feel about Skittering Surveyor 2.0?
I mean, I'm scared. I'm like both extremely excited and very nervous that it won't live up to the hype. That Skittering Surveyor with creature types is not good enough in 2026. But spoiler alert, it is currently on my notable commons list. So I'm coming in feeling very good about it, and the set will have to prove me right or prove me wrong. But I'm excited to see it back for sure.
Much like Stranger Things, you believe.
That's right. I believe. And then I will put my binder very emotionally back on the shelf. How are you feeling about, I know Skittering Surveyor is not perhaps your pride and joy, but about the set as a whole, we're diving into the crash course. It always feels like quite a beast of an undertaking. And we're back to a Magic Universe set, a beloved Magic Universe set at that. How are you feeling about the crash course today?
I'm feeling excited to get to play with Lorwyn cards. I have not drafted a Lorwyn set ever. It was during my hiatus from Magic. I had seen next to no Lorwyn previews prior to Friday when I sat down to grade all the cards, and I like what I see. I think the uncommons look absolutely juiced to me, and there seem to be a lot of powerful commons too, and they look like fun cards to play with. I think I'm excited to dive in and cast some Merfolk, cast some goblins.
Yeah, there's some things about this format that excite me. I will say, not to begin on a low note, but I'm a little dubious about the lifetime or about the longevity of a set like this that is so focused on creature types and typal. I messaged you. I was like, I'm a little worried that after like week two, this set's going to feel kind of boring. But there are some sort of like tier two things seeded in that seem like they might be exciting. So who knows? But I'm coming in with some temperate expectations, but I've got some takes for sure to run by you. So we'll see how those go.
Yeah, I'm locked. I'm loaded. I'm ready to go.
So we're here for Crash Course season. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We are not going to be doing, if you're consuming a plethora of limited content, we won't be doing a card by card graded evaluation. Though if you want to see all of the commons and uncommons graded by each of us individually, we will have a spreadsheet available for you where you download the show. What we're going to be doing here is some broad strokes, big picture things. We're going to first run through the mechanics and archetypes since we didn't get to do, I think we'll be doing that in the Crash Course moving forward anyway, but we didn't get to do our sort of full preview episode usually. So we want to make sure we set the stage for what the format is like if you have not pored over the spoiler yourself. Then we're going to get into, each of us have been tasked with a few things coming into this episode. Firstly is 5 format truths, things we expect to be true about the format. We're going to make some big, bold predictions there. Then we're going to go into each of the colors and what their identities are. And along with that, we'll come us listing our top three uncommons for each color and any notable commons we want to shout out. We'll round things out with some sleeper commons, some multicolor uncommons to talk about, and then any big picture takeaways we want to round out the episode with. So that's what we got in store for you. It is a crash course. We're going to be packing it in. Let's do a little housekeeping before we get into the bulk of the episode. Chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We've got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page. One of them is access to our Lords of Limited Discord, which is an amazing community of like-minded limited individuals. And the other is access to our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. This week, Ben had a little hiatus, but I'm going to be having our good friend Jared, aka J-Maz, back on to talk about a very exciting addition to the show, maybe a revival for the show, which is the Lords of Limited Treasure Hunt is back. Jared decided he wanted to take that on, so we're going to have some achievements posted up in the Discord for folks to cross off. We've got, I think, 10 achievements, sort of a race to get there first and grab them. And then we're also got three sort of like, you know, see who can get the most, the biggest number of achievements that'll be races throughout the format. But if you want access to play along for those sweet achievements and treasure hunt stuff, that's going to be in the Discord as well. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Nicholas, Cobalt Cohen, John, Kotsby, Michael, Arkadarp, and Andrew. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Those people want to get better at Magic in 2026, and you should too. Cannot say thank you enough. Also, I feel like we would be remiss talking about the return of the treasure hunt and not shouting out treasure hunt legend Generation D20. If you're out there listening, hit us up. It's coming back. Maybe this will reel you back into Magic in the podcast.
If you want to know about the treasure hunt, go back to the annals of the podcast. Check out or go to the website. Find, I don't know, episode 50, 60, back in the day. Let's talk about we've got the full scope of the mechanics, the full scope of the draft archetypes. So we're going to set the stage for Lorwyn Eclipsed now. Mechanics. First up, we've got Vivid, which is an ability word that highlights abilities that care about the number of colors among permanents you control. Obviously, it will be between 0 as the minimum and 5 as the maximum. And this seems like fairly supported, as we'll talk about, but has things throughout the all 5 colors that seem to care about this slash maybe enable it as well.
Are you a believer? Yes or no? Greater garbage segment
on Vivid. Yeah. Well, this is a spoiler for one of my format truths. I'm saying great on Vivid.
Wow. In the sense of you think Vivid is a 5 color deck that exists, or you think Vivid cards are going to be good enough, like if you're triggering them with 3, for example.
Here's something that I said to Ben specifically before we recorded.
Keep it moving.
I said, during mechanics and draft archetypes, let's try and not equivocate. And here we are landing on Vivid. We'll get to it when we get to my format truths.
I'm just so juiced to talk about Magic. I've been dealing with school all week.
This is this ice cream sundae at the end of your meal.
All right. Blight is up next. Blight X means to put X -1/-1 counters on a creature you control. And I think the important thing to know about Blight is that there's ways to turn this, what looks like a cost, into upside in this format. And it's, I think, a big player in the archetypes that are not the seeded tribal archetypes.
Correct. Yeah, which we'll get to. But it's sort of like 5 and 5. 5 are, hey, here's a creature type, and that's what this archetype is about. And then 5 are sort of dealer's choice. What do you think this archetype is about? And we'll get to that as well. Changeling is back, and this is really important in the context of this being a set that cares about, what is it? It's not tribal, it's typal.
Typal.
I don't know. All right. Typal. In a set that cares about typal and creature types, Changeling is huge because changelings are creatures that are every creature type.
Next up is Kindred, which is a card type that's added to non-creature cards to allow them to have creature types, which listeners were very kind to educate us about. I did not know the difference between Kindred and Typal.
Yeah. And I think that's also super interesting when, like, the Elves deck seems to care about things in the graveyard. And so, like, when your Kindred Elf spell is in the graveyard, that counts as an Elf.
Well, and Kithkin, too. Kithkin are super Typal.
Yeah. Convoke is back. This is an alternate way to cast spells. Each creature you tap while casting spells with Convoke pays for either one generic or one mana of that creature's color.
Behold is another returning mechanic. This is something that's going to say, for example, like behold an elf, which means you have to choose an elf that you control or reveal an elf card from your hand. And oftentimes that's going to be tied to those five main creature types of, we should say what they are. There's merfolk, boggarts, elves, boggarts being goblins. And what? Why are you laughing at me?
Your boomer is showing by saying boggarts instead of goblins.
No, they're called boggarts, aren't they? I thought I was trying to correct myself.
Oh, I think it's goblins.
But it's boggarts in the plane of Lorwyn.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm looking for the Borthoses out there.
Your boomer's showing anyway.
Elementals and you distracted me. Kithkin is the last one.
For sure. Evoke is sort of back, but it's only on a cycle of mythics. It's an alternate cost on some permanents. If you pay the evoke cost, you have to sacrifice the creature when it enters.
And Persist is an old one. When a creature with Persist dies, if it had no -1/-1 counters on it, it returns to the battlefield under its owner's control with a -1/-1 counter on it. So kind of get two lives from your card there.
Interesting in conversation with the Blight -1/-1 counters in the set as well.
Correct.
All right, draft archetypes. We'll start with the five typals, and then we'll get into the five sort of secondary tier two ones. Blue-white is Merfolk. The WotC blurb is use a variety of tricky tapping synergies to cast your spells for cheap and disrupt your opponents. The signpost uncommon is Deep Channel Duelist, white-blue for a 2/2. At the beginning of your end step, untap target Merfolk you control, and other Merfolk you control get +1/+1.
Red-black goblins. Throw a boggart at every problem. Find ways to put -1/-1 counters on your disposable goblin forces and reap rewards. So the signpost we've got here is Boggart Cursecrafter. It's black-red for a 2/3 with death touch. And whenever another goblin you control dies, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent.
Green-white is Kithkin. Use the power of shared consciousness to spread abilities among Kithkin. The more Kithkin you play, the greater your thought weft grows. The signpost is Thought Weft Lieutenant. It's green-white for a 2/2. Whenever this creature or another Kithkin you control enters, target creature you control gets +1/+1 and gains Trample until end of turn. That packs a punch.
Blue-red Elementals is up next. Burn bright like a flamekin. Cast big spells to unleash seismic elemental power. Card we've got as an example here is Twin Flame Travelers. This one is kind of a wah-wah compared to the others. It's 2 blue-red for a 3/3 uncommon with flying. If a triggered ability of another elemental you control triggers, it triggers an additional time. This is a lot of hoops.
Kind of how I feel about blue-red elementals in general is wah-wah. And lastly is green-black elves. Harness the cycle of nature and use your graveyard as a resource to overwhelm your opponents. The signpost here is Morkint's Loyalist. 1 black-green for a 3/2 elf warrior. Other elves you control get +1/+1, and when this creature dies, return another target elf card from your graveyard to your hand.
All right, that takes us on to the five archetypes where WotC didn't give us a tagline. So first up of those is blue-black, what looks to be flash or casting things at instant speed. Signpost is Voracious Tome Skimmer. It's Demir hybrid for a 2/3 uncommon fairy rogue with flying. Whenever you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, you can pay 1 life. If you do, draw a card.
Yeah, red-green treasure matters. I think red green has to be some sort of flavor of Vivid, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And that signpost here is Noggle Robber, which is 1 gruel hybrid for a 3/3. When it enters or dies, you make a treasure token.
Next up, we've got red white Blight Sinks, which is Hovel Hurler. This is 3 and Boros for a 6/7 uncommon giant warrior that enters with 2 -1/-1 counters on it. And then you can pay Boros to remove a counter from this creature to give another target creature you control +1/+0 and flying until end of turn at sorcery speed.
Next is blue-green, which is Vivid. We've got Glisterbairn, which is 2 and triple Simic hybrid. So 5 total mana for a 1/4. Creature type is oof, and I also say oof to a 5 mana 1/4.
Yes.
But the Vivid trigger here is at the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of colors among permanents you control. So this by itself will give something +2/+2 until end of turn every combat step.
It's so clunky though. That card is clunktastic.
It sure is.
Lastly, we've got black white Blight Sinks, which is Reaping Willow. one Orzhov for an uncommon 3-6 tree folk cleric with lifelink, enters with 2/-1/-1 counters on it, and you can pay one in Orzhov to remove 2 counters from this creature to return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only as a sorcery.
If you know anything about me, you know I am very excited for Black-White Blightsynx.
Oh, just absolutely.
Jumping through some hoops to make your cards do literally anything. Sign me up. Okay. Let's get to these format truths. I'll go first since we already sort of teased one of mine, but that one is last. So my format truths here, the predictions I have, big bold predictions for Lorwyn Eclipse. Number one, uncommons matter in a big way. And commons have 3 significant tiers, like 3 pretty big gaps. There are strong pulls, like cards that are going to matter, then gap, then cards that are good in one deck, and then a gap, cards that are filler. And there's a lot of that third tier.
There are a lot of that third tier. I agree. I co-sign that take 100% and have one that is very similar.
Number two, just like lessons and to a lesser extent allies, and those both got a bump for their types in Avatar, changelings get as much, if not more, of a bump in Lorwyn Eclipsed. I think there's not only are they going to be just like gluey in the draft in terms of delaying your decision, going in multiple decks, they're going to juice up your, you know, type main typal decks. I also think they're going to be the glue for what I'm sort of envisioning is going to be these sort of off typal, air quotes, party decks for Zendikar Rising folks, where I think what you're going to have in like maybe a red white deck is like an elemental payoff or maybe a Kithkin payoff, and then 2 changelings, and your changelings play double duty in supporting this Kithkin and this elemental thing. So I think you're going to have decks where you can sort of steal or borrow from some other typal groups, and those are going to be those 5 off decks. All of that is to say that changelings are better than you think.
I agree. The other thing you didn't mention is a lot of them are hybrid, and so they're going to be 2 colors for Vivid as well.
Number 3, while some of the removal looks clunky, interacting is as important as ever. Breaking up linear synergies and protecting your own will be how games are won or lost.
Yeah, I don't have a take like that one, but that was something I was thinking about while I was grading cards, is some of the typal lords, like the Merfolk Lord or the Kithkin Lord, for example, are pretty pushed, or even the Elf Lord, that give your team +1/+1, essentially. And those are going to be so easily disruptible by interaction. And yeah, so I like that take. I don't have one that's similar. I don't know if I would go quite that hard on how important removal is. I also have not looked at any of the rares yet, to be clear, full disclosure, to see, you know, how many absurd bombs we're going to be dealing with, if we're in an Avatar situation or not.
Number 4, Blight is a format defining mechanic, and like Bargain from Wilds of Eldraine, is more of an upside than at first blush. And I think figuring out how to maximize this mechanic in draft, deck building, and gameplay is going to put players ahead of the curve.
Yes, I have one that is extremely similar to that. Co-sign it completely.
And number 5, Vivid is the 6th linear deck in the format. So if we think about the 5 creature types as the linear decks, I think Vivid is the 6th. I think a lot of the payoffs for Vivid, when you tip the scale from 2, like I was sort of, as I was evaluating Vivid cards, I was like, okay, is this playable in a 2-color deck? If this gets a trigger for 2, and a lot of them are fine. But when you tip the scale from 2 to 3 or 3 plus, these payoffs are big, and it looks not only supported, but also like some of the payoffs you're like, I'd play that in a deck, but some of them no decks will want other than the Vivid deck. Like Explosive Prodigy is 1 and a red for a 1/1 with Vivid, deals Vivid damage to a creature when it enters. Like no red, like red decks are probably not interested in 2 mana 1/1 deal 2.
What? I disagree completely. I think the card's excellent.
You think the card's just excellent? Like, okay.
It's a baby flame tongue. The card's amazing.
I guess 2 mana 1/1 deal 2. Yeah, so it's probably pretty good. Anyway, Maybe that example.
I think that's one of the only examples that wouldn't have worked for me.
Okay. It's going to be a lot easier to be like, oh, the Merfolk uncommon is here. Pick five. Merfolk is open. I think it's going to be a lot harder in weeks one or two to like understand all the pieces that make the Vivid deck tick. And I think a lot of the payoffs and enablers will go late. Like, there's a lot of fixing in the format. There's hybrid cards, as we already sort of mentioned, that turn these on. Like, you get one hybrid card in play, and that's two colors. And some cards are seeded that gain different colors. This archetype, or this, I guess it is an archetype, but this deck looks supported to me, and I think is going to perform.
I'm excited that you're excited about that, because I was not very excited, and you're talking me up on it.
Great.
A lot of the Vivid payoffs, though, to me, the question I have is, they're so expensive, and a lot of them are at 4 mana or 5 mana, and they're kind of clunky looking. They're powerful, don't get me wrong. Like, then you're going to have a functional curve into, like, usually the recipe for a deck that is stretching into multiple colors like that. And I think I'm kind of rethinking it in that maybe you'll be able to be a two-color deck and use hybrid cards to get you into your Vivid territory. Like, maybe you're not going to have a bad mana base. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm definitely rethinking already. But my usual recipe for that type of deck would be interaction early, multicolored payoffs late, right? But you're going to have to build your board out along the way as the Vivid deck. Like, your Vivid payoff can't be the first thing hitting the board. So I think that's just going to be a different kind of deck building puzzle. All right, number one for me, format truths. The decks in the format look fairly prescribed, which I usually don't love, but the hybrid mana and the design of the set makes it seem like drafts are still going to be pretty skill intensive. So I think cautiously optimistic. Like, this kind of has Bloomburrow vibes to me, which I did not like at all. But I think this is going to be a much more interesting draft experience than Bloomburrow was.
Yeah, that's my, like, Blight and Vivid feel like they are enough of an interesting puzzle for me so far that I'm not ready to call this just like paint by numbers Bloomburrow kind of set.
Number two, each color has a primary tribe except for black, thanks to having better cards of one of their two tribes that goes along with them. So I think white really focused on Kithkin, blue really focused on Merfolk. Black is the one that doesn't. I think it's pretty evenly split between goblins and elves. Red really wants goblins, and green really wants elves.
Interesting. This is so, that's like, I decided to, for my color identities, to do a primary, secondary, tertiary.
Okay.
We're almost all lined up there.
Number three, this is your Blight take. Turning Blight into upside is going to be the most powerful thing to do in the format.
I really, like, I don't know if this is, it's hard because I feel like it's partially what I hope to be true, because Blight excites me. Blight seems like the most interesting puzzle right now. It's the biggest question mark to me. So I don't know if it's just cope and me being like, I really want this to be good, but it looks really cool.
It looks really good.
And it's so, like, not omnipresent in that it's in every color. Like, it's mostly in Mardu. But there's a lot of cards with Blight on them. And a lot of ways to be like, okay, like, sort of there's the self-contained cards that just, like, I come in with -1/-1 counters and I have ways to remove them. And then it's, okay, then how am I using it there? Or is the 2-mana 1/3 that when it dies, you draw a card, is that good? Or is the single black 1/1 that when it dies, put a -1/-1 counter? Those wear Blight counters, great. Like, is that what you're supposed to do? All of that seems like part of the puzzle to me.
All right, number four, got some early tribe power rankings.
I knew you would.
Number one, Kithkin. Kithkin look absurdly supported, and the curve outs look really nasty.
Yeah, it looks like the boogeyman.
Yeah, I think Kithkin is going to be the best of one boogeyman for sure. Number two, elves. No, that's a lie. Number two, merfolk. Number three, elves. Number four, goblins. And number five, wah-wah, elementals.
Like a distant five.
A distant five, yeah. I also think the first three, I also think there's a gap before goblins. But maybe goblins is just going to be not as smacking you in the face obvious. But it certainly looks a tad less supported to me than Kithkin, Merfolk, and Elves. Because those are the three tribes that get great lords.
Yeah, right.
Goblins is kind of, and the elemental one is like, what happened here? Compared to the others.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Number five, uncommons are cracked. The commons outside of the top 10 commons are not.
Wow. It feels like one of the first times where we had a ton of overlap.
Yeah, and I think while having different points, we're largely in agreement. I also have a very fun sixth format truth, which you kind of already ruined, which is that Ethan is going to fall in love with Mardu Blight in week two.
Week two? Hour two? Hour two of early access. Yeah. Yep. It's interesting, though. I'm curious. Well, as we get to the colors, I'm sure you also do have a color power rankings in your head.
Do not. Other than that, it probably lines up with the tribe power rankings. I certainly think white is number one for me, but I haven't thought that hard about it.
I'll be curious to sort of try and unpack it because I have some. I need to grab a mini therapy session with you after we go through our colors and all the cards because I'm wrestling with some dissonance in my head with what I'm seeing in some colors, but the rankings that I want to put them or the colors that I feel like I want to get deep in draft.
Okay.
Okay. Let's kick things off by talking about white. Do you want to go first with your identity and some uncommons and commons to chat about?
Sure. So for notes on colors, I said white seems super focused on Kithkin. They're great enablers at common. And then I did my grading in the orders and my notes in the orders of commons first and then uncommons. And so a question I had was, will the payoffs match the great enablers at common? And I think they do. White's uncommons look totally insane. And again, super focused on Kithkin with a lot more blight support as well at uncommon. I think white, and this is true of a lot of the colors, looks a little less focused than usual, like because there's a lot of stuff outside of Kithkin too, like you're dipping into Merfolk, there's some vivid stuff, but it looks really strong to me. And I think Kithkin curve outs are going to be one of the default best things to do in the format early on.
So the way I structured mine was I went like primary, secondary, tertiary. Then I tried to come up with a uniting factor between the three, if I could, and then any notes that I wanted to make after that. So for me, I said primary Kithkin, secondary Merfolk, tertiary Blight. And those are, it's three pretty distinct camps in my mind. The uniting factor seems to be board presence people. Like white wants to play to the board pretty, like whether you're Kithkin, whether you're Merfolk, even if you're doing like Blight control stuff, I think you want to play to the board. But they all three of them, while being distinct, look fairly strong and viable to me.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
All right, notable commons. Kicking things off first with Gold Meadow Nomad. Single white for a 1/2 Kithkin Scout, and you can pay white, exile this card from your graveyard to make a 1/1 green and white Kithkin creature token, activate only as a sorcery.
Yes, this made my sleeper commons, but I could definitely see, like, it would not surprise me if this was a data darling, as you say. Like, if this was the top white common, it would not surprise me.
Yeah, I think this card is going to be as good as Kithkin is, and I am starting the format out thinking that Kithkin is going to be very good.
I think it's also worth noting that, like, this could have been a 1/1, but the fact that this is a 1/2 and could potentially wear two blight counters before it dies is also huge.
Next up, I've got Spiral into Solitude. One and a white for an aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block, and you can pay one and a white, blight one, sacrifice this aura to exile enchanted creature.
The question that never gets old. Will pacifism be good in this format? And you say yes.
I say yes, and I think it's an interesting question because there's a lot of easy, obvious knocks, and maybe this is just recency bias coming off of Avatar and, you know... But the easy, obvious knock against it is that it doesn't turn off Vivid. But I'm not that big of a believer in Vivid, so I don't hate that knock against it. The other obvious knock against it is if your opponent is playing Blight, they can just Blight for free onto the thing that's got Spiral and Solitude on it. But the thing I like about it for white specifically is that I'm trying to think about being able to Blight yourself wherever you want to as an upside. So I think like this cost of one and a white blight one might actually be an upside. And if that is the case for your deck, I really like Spiral into Solitude.
I am not a believer in Spiral into Solitude going into the format myself. It did not make my notable commons list. It did not make my sleeper commons list. Maybe I did give it a zero. The other like knock against it that I want to shout out is that not only does it leaving the things on the battlefield, but you already sort of shouted out this, that the signposts on commons that you care about removing, that you want to disrupt, that you want to get off the battlefield, the lords, putting this on there ain't doing diddly squat.
Well, except it's not like 5 mana to get rid of the thing. You know what I mean? It's another 2 mana plus a potential upside. That's what I'm saying. If you're not actively excited about blighting one onto your own stuff, this card is terrible.
Maybe if I reframe it as 2 white, blight one, exile a creature. That's bet. And then the fact that that's in installments, like 2 white, exile a creature, blight one. Maybe I'm okay. Maybe I like that card. And the fact that this is an installment.
Installments is just upside. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. How I'm looking at it.
Okay.
If you want Blight 1 as an upside, this card's going to be good. If you don't want Blight 1 as an upside for you, this card is atrocious.
Okay.
Next up, I've got Luminal Hold, which is 3 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever this enchantment enters, exile up to 1 target non-land permanent opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield. You gain 2 life. Nothing to not like here. This card is excellent.
Nothing to not like, says known Banishing Light hater Ben Wernie.
Finally turning it around,
putting it on his notable commons list. Yeah, that should be on my list. It's not currently on my notable commons list, but it should be. The only notable common that you did not list that I did want to shout out, and this should probably be on my sleeper list, but I got eyes for Wanderbrine Preacher, which is 1 and a white for a 2/2 merfolk cleric. When it becomes tapped, you gain 2 life. So this has real compassionate healer vibes from Avatar, The Last Airbender to me. 2 life is just so much life. And I do think that this is, you know, there's a black 2 mana 2/2 with lifelink. And I do think this is better than that in the context of what Merfolk is doing all this tapping stuff. You know, it's good. There's Convoke in there. There's just lots of like tap this creature to do a thing. And 2 life is a lot of life. So I have eyes for Wanderbrine Preacher.
Okay. I like it.
What about your top 3 uncommons?
We have all different uncommons here. I peeked at yours before we started recording, and that is just a nod to how insane White's uncommons are.
Yeah, I think I gave like 6 Bs, and so I was just sort of like, I'm just going to pick the 3 Bs, and it seems like I picked 3 different ones than you.
Yeah, so number 1 for me, I have Clachan Festival, which is 2 and a white for a kindred enchantment. It's a Kithkin itself. When this enchantment enters, create 2/1/1 green and white Kithkin creature tokens, and you can pay 4 and a white to create a 1/1 green and white Kithkin creature token. This card is going to be absurd for the old Thought Weft. You're going to get 3 Kithkin entering the battlefield triggers for 3 mana. And normally that costs 4 mana, plus you're going to be able to pump out other ones afterwards. I think Kithkin looks absurd, and I think when this hits the battlefield, the Kithkin deck is going to do absurd things.
Okay, so I did not, in my head, I was like, 3 mana for 2 1/1s is not a great rate, but I had not clocked that the enchantment itself will trigger any Kithkin ETB stuff.
Yeah. I think 2 1/1s plus the 3 triggers plus future Kithkin triggers on demand when you need creatures entering the battlefield late in the game and you're out of gas. This card looks incredible to me.
Well, and also you can do it at like the fact that you have instant speed stuff. So for your Thought Weft Kithkin Lord, you're attacking and your opponent doesn't know what you're going to give +1/+1 and trample to.
Correct.
And you have the activation.
It's going to make combat a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Okay. I'm in for it.
Number 2, I've got Moonlit Lamenter. This is 2 and a white for a 2/5 Treefolk Cleric. It enters with a -1/-1 counter on it, and you can pay 1 and a white to remove a counter from this creature to draw a card. Activate only as a sorcery.
In my heart, this is my number 1 white uncommon, but I don't know if it actually is. But this card is
this card's juiced. Good.
Yeah.
It's 3 mana for a 1/4. Immediately draw a card. Mm-hmm. And then all of that other stuff I was talking about, like Spiral into Solitude, you've got your pacifism effect. And then all of a sudden your pacifism is pacifism, exile a thing, draw a card on a future turn. The Blight decks look grindy, and I think if you can get the game to slow down and get in the muck with Blight, this card looks absurd.
I agree.
So you left that off your uncommons list.
I did.
Wow, you're just fighting your own nature.
I am fighting my own nature.
Trying to do a service to the listeners.
Maybe it'll age poorly, I don't know.
And in the number three slot for me, I've got Thought Weft Imbuer. This is 3 and a white for an uncommon 05 Kithkin Advisor. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it gets plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of Kithkin you control.
Yep, this one I'm not as excited about.
There's so many ways to give Kithkin trample. This is going to come down and give a thing plus three or plus four.
You just are so prone. You love these cards. Team Avatar, for example. Love these kinds of cards.
Yes.
And I like them less than you.
This is also an 05, though. It's going to brick wall your opponent's offense on the ground. This card is.
And it doesn't brick wall. I can attack everything into it.
Nah.
It has no power.
Nah.
Scar, I think it's bad. Like, I think you're playing it in your Kithkin decks, but top uncommons over all of my three, I don't know about that. Okay, my number one, the uncommon I am really excited about is Meander's Guide. 2 and a white for a 3/2 Merfolk Scout. Whenever this creature attacks, you may tap another untapped Merfolk you control. When you do, return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. I just think like when this comes down, the game is going to warp around it. That's going to be like, okay, I got to figure out what to do with this because I really don't want you to get value off of this.
I agree. I just think this dies to a sneeze. And then I think the first time it attacks, it's also going to die.
Great. And then it's a 2 for 1, but you're so incentivized to block it that like, what if I protect it with a trick? What if I kill the thing you block with and I get another thing? Like, I just think this is a really good card.
Okay.
It seems very engine-y to me. And then I ho-hum put a few removal spells on here, but I think these removal spells look quite good to me. The first is Protective Response. It's 2 and a white for an instant with Convoke. Destroy target attacking or blocking creature. This can be potentially free. This can help trigger your Merfolk stuff. And I think gone are the days where, while I do think like White's primary and secondary strategies being Kithkin and Merfolk are both aggressive, gone are the days where I'm knocking, like killing a blocking creature still works for me in those decks.
Yes.
I'm not mad about that. I agree. And then lastly, I have Pyrrhic Strike, which is 2 and a white for an instant. As an additional cost to cast the spell, you may blight 2. And you choose 1, or if you blight 2, then you get to choose both instead. You can destroy target artifact or enchantment, or destroy target creature with mana value 3 or greater. And I do think there's a handful, I mean, this for sure, but there's a handful of incidental artifact and enchantment removal that does have me just like slightly nervous about the aura-based removal that White and Blue are bringing to the party that I think are going to just catch some strays from cards like this.
I agree. That's definitely going to happen some amount of the time. Burden Stoneback is 1 and a white for an uncommon 4/4, enters with 2 -1/-1 counters on it, and you can pay 1 and a white to remove a counter from this to give target creature indestructible until end of turn. You can only do that at sorcery speed. And then another one is Encumbered Reejury, which is 1 and a white for a 5/4, comes in with 3 -1/-1 counters, and whenever it becomes tapped, you remove -1/-1 counter from it. Both of these cards seem like really absurd 2 drops to me. I just wanted to kind of highlight the Kithkin and the Blight synergies with my top uncommons.
Yes, I think so the reasons I gave these like slightly lower grades was I was just feeling like when you're not blighting, I think these cards get a little worse. And I also think like your Kithkin deck is going to want to be max Kithkin.
Correct.
Your Merfolk deck is going to want to be max Merfolk.
Yes.
And so I don't. So then these cards, like, I mean, Encumbered Reejury is going to be very good in the Merfolk deck.
In a Merfolk deck, yeah.
But also, if there are, and I think there's going to have to be, these sort of like, I'm going to keep calling them party decks, cards that are pulling from multiple things. It's like, I do a little bit of this, I do a little bit of Blight, I got some Merfolk. Like, those decks are going to also want cards like these. But I don't think that makes them B grade cards in my mind. But I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
All right. Anything else about White before we move on to Blue?
No, I'm good.
White also, maybe we'll get to this a little later. White also had some of our biggest, like 3 cards where one of us gave it a B and the other one gave it like effectively a D, like a did not matter, which maybe we'll get to a little later. But I think we got to keep things moving here and get to Blue. So for Blue, I agreed that primary was merfolk. Secondary, I actually gave to fairies and not like elementals, not here for me. So primary merfolk, secondary fairies, and tertiary vivid for me. I think blue is going to play nicely in the vivid space, thanks to certainly the basic land cycler it has. And the uniting factor among all of these, among what blue is doing, is instant speed, which is why I bumped fairies up and left elementals off the list.
Love it. I had a very similar thought. I said blue's commons really want to play at instant speed, and I am here for it. Also, great removal for blue at common compared to what it normally gets. Blue gets some really strong interaction.
It's incredible. In a world where I'm like, I'm a little nervous about what whites bring into the party. For blue, I'm like, blue just seems easily, like I don't know what the Vegas odds are right now. Blue seems like the best color in the set to me from jump.
Okay. I'm here for that. Also, like I said, I haven't given much thought to color power rankings, so I love that take.
Who are you and what have you done with Ben Wernie?
It's been a busy week. I was doing good to get tribal rankings going on.
Did any colors, uncommons, not seem cracked to you?
Yeah, red and green dipped off a bit. Red especially.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But blue, I didn't love vivid for blue. I didn't think it got that much that looked like it added to that deck. But I think both merfolk and elementals get a lot of really good payoffs and enabler type things going on at uncommon.
Yeah. I threw three blue commons on my notable commons list. The first is Blossom Bind, one and a blue for an aura. Enchant creature. When this aura enters, tap enchanted creature. Enchanted creature can't become untapped. Can't become untapped is crazy. And can't have counters put on it. So you can't, it solves the white problem with you can't blight onto the creature either.
This is easily the best claustrophobia effect we've ever seen.
Ever.
And is better costed.
Yeah.
It's just one in a blue.
It's crazy. Power creep. An oldie but a goodie is back. Temporal Cleansing. Three in a blue for a sorcery with Convoke. The owner of target non-land permanent puts it into their library second from the top or on the bottom. Convoke on this effect is busted. It's just busted. Like,
yes,
we usually pay four mana at instant speed, but we pay four mana for this effect normally. And the fact that you could potentially pay zero mana for this effect is incredible.
Well, and also worth noting, it's especially good because merfolk are going to want to tap for the convoke. So it's great in the merfolk deck, but also for elementals, if elementals is better than you and I are thinking it's going to be, this is also four mana value for elementals that you're not going to have to pay full price for necessarily.
I know, but it's like the only, that's one of the reasons I knocked elementals on this like four, this MV4 thing is because this is like one of the only cards that lets you do it at a discount. There's no fire bending lesson. There's no thunder magic. There's no like modal ways to do it other than convoke, it seems like.
Correct.
And then our top common alert from last week, unexpected assistance, three blue for an instant with convoke, draw three cards, then discard a card.
I'm so obsessed with that card.
Card's real good. Did you put any other blue cards on your top notable commons list?
I did not. Those were my three. We are three for three on the blue commons.
Okay. Blue uncommons in the number one spot, I put Rhymekin Recluse. Two and a blue for a 3/2 elemental wizard. When it enters, return up to one other target creature to its owner's hand. A nice three power, mana war effect. Number two, I have Glamour Gifter. One and a blue for a 1/2 fairy wizard with flash and flying. And when it enters, choose up to one other target creature. Until end of turn, that creature has base power and toughness 4/4 and gains all creature types. There's a lot going on this card. The upside is really real with the potential to ambush two creatures in combat. Adding creature type to something at instant speed is also a benefit. This having a relevant type for fairies is good, or I guess fairies isn't a relevant type, but flash is a relevant
ability. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything I like about that card.
I like that card a lot too. That should probably be on my list.
And then in the number three spot, I feel less confident about this. I have Unwelcome Sprite. It's one and a blue for a 2/1 fairy rogue with flying. And whenever you cast a spell during an opponent's turn, surveil two.
I mean, the card's good.
It's just good.
It's hard to go wrong with that card.
For sure. But top uncommon, like I feel like is this B range? I don't know. Is it C plus? For sure.
For sure. Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got the same top uncommon, Rhymekin Recluse. Bummer that this is an elemental, because every blue deck is just going to want it, but theoretically this will help elementals not be horrifically far behind while they're trying to cast four mana value spells.
Yeah.
Number two slot, I've got Swat Away. I think this card is also absurd. This is another one for elementals. This is two blue-blue for an instant uncommon. This spell costs two less to cast if a creature is attacking you, and the owner of target spell or creature puts it on their choice at the top or bottom of their library. Okay. So this is another one that you could potentially cast for blue-blue in the elementals deck. Yep. I think I'm slightly more of a believer in elementals than you are, just from hearing you talk about it. I'm also down on it, to be clear, but there's going to be elementals decks.
You definitely are, because one of the only other cards that we had that difference of B grade, D grade was Tanifel Rhyme Speaker, which is it's four mana for a 2/4 in blue that whenever you cast something with MV4 or greater, you draw a card. I think I'm two thumbs down on Rhyme Speaker.
You're two thumbs down. Well, that's my number three uncommon. Thank you for setting it up beautifully. But I think this is going to be a problem, much like it's not as smooth of a curve, right? As in Final Fantasy, when you played your 3-drop that wanted you to cast mana value spells for a greater, what was the name of that card? Shantotto, Tactician Magician.
Yeah.
This is a similar card to that in that it's going to be a problem. You're going to play this on 4, and then you're threatening after this. It's a must-deal-with card, because every spell you cast after this is going to be cantripping.
I guess.
I mean, I don't love it, to be clear. I think
you seem to love it.
This should probably be off.
You see, you love it.
This should probably be off my list, and I should probably have the 1/2 Flash Fairy on my list.
Okay.
All right. It takes us on to black. Here are my thoughts on black. I said a lot of sleeper commons for me in black. Great removal and a lot of situationally good creatures that you need to make sure are in the right situation. I think black is playing a lot in the blight space at uncommon, and all of that synergy with blight looks really pushed to me. Black looks like a bit of a jack of all trades, but it also looks like all of its decks that it is a jack of all trades in will work. Like, I think goblins looks like it works, elves looks like it works, and blight really looks like it works to me.
I agree, but this is another one where I'm trying to, like, I am prone to like black, and I feel like I'm prone to overrate this color. And so I'm trying to temper that, but I feel all of those things. I did give it a primary of elves, but I agree that's close, but I gave it a primary of elves, a secondary of goblins, and a tertiary of blight. But the uniting factor.
Interesting. I think it would give it primary blight.
Primary blight. Well, that's in my uniting factor was -1/-1 counters. Like, all three of these decks have places to put them and ways to remove them. Very effectively.
So then blight's got to be primary, right?
I guess like this primary.
Black looks to me like what you're describing the most, where it's going to be, well, we're doing a little of this elf stuff, we're doing a little of this goblin stuff, and blight is tying the room together.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. And I also have a ton of black sleeper commons that I was like, this seems like a thing, like where no other color had that. No other color had like a list of 5 cards where I was like, this is interesting.
Correct. So top commons, notable commons for me, Bog Slither's Embrace, 1 and a black for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast the spell, blight 1 or pay 3, exile target creature. This looks absurd, especially assuming that you're viewing blight 1 as an upside.
Yep.
Blight Rot is up next. This is 2 and a black for an instant. Put 4 -1/-1 counters on target creature.
Yep. Those two are on my list as well.
Sleeper commons for me, because those are my only two notable commons.
Okay.
Auntie's Sentence, or is it Auntie's Sentence? Feels like it should be Auntie's Sentence as a goblin card. One in a black sorcery, choose one. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land permanent card from it. That player discards that card, or target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn.
I almost wanted to put this on my notable commons list.
I did too. It's a very cool card.
This is the best, like, usually this split, they've started doing this split card version of the discard variant or do something else. But it's usually make a vanilla 2/2.
Yes.
This being a removal spell as a split card to this. Now, it only hits permanents. Non-land permanent card is what you can grab out of their hand. But it seems really good to me.
I like it. Next up, I've got Dawnhand Eulogist, 3 and a black for a 3/3 with menace. When this creature enters, mill 3 cards. Then if there's an elf card in your graveyard, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. This looks like a banger for an elf deck.
Well, I totally agree. And elf decks care about your graveyard being filled with elves. So not only is this helping fuel that, but also 4-mana 3/3 with types that drains two is going to be good.
Yeah. Next up, I've got Dream Caesar. 3 and a black for a 3/2 with flying. When this creature enters, you can blight one. If you do, each opponent discards a card.
Yep. I think that card is sneaky good.
And they're going to go in different decks, right? Like, it's, that's why it's hard to put either one in the notable commons.
Mm-hmm.
But I think black getting four drops that are powerful, that are probably going to go pretty late, seems like a boon for it.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to get to the black uncommons. Maybe you're right. Okay. Maybe black is like the prime party color. Because I feel like black gets some really good shapeshifter spells at uncommon that we'll touch in on that are going to also like, okay, that's in your graveyard. Cool. Now when I can play my elf mill card that's going to drain two in any black deck because I'm just going to have those shapeshifter changeling cards in my deck.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Next up, Scarblade's Malice. Black for an instant. Target creature you control gains death touch and lifelink until end of turn. When that creature dies this turn, make a 2/2 black and green elf creature token.
Yeah, is this good?
I think so.
It's hard. Like, there was a lot of scuttle about this card in the Lord's Limited Discord.
Was there? I didn't see any of that scuttle.
Yeah, so comparing it to, there was Toxin Analysis from Murders at Karlov Manor, which did this effect, but instead of giving you a 2/2, gave you a clue. That card wasn't that good. But we've also had effects like this. There was a similar card in that set that I think gave like +2/+0 or whatever. And then when it died, you made a 2/2 detective. So we've like seen these kinds of effects, the +3/+0 and Manifest Dread from Duskmourn. We've seen these effects to varying degrees of success. So jury's out for me on this, but I definitely have eyes on it. So I think that's a right spot for sleeper common then.
And that's it for black. Those four.
I have a couple others to add to the list. One is Bile Vile Boggart, which is single black for a 1/1 goblin assassin. When it dies, you put a -1/-1 counter on up to one target creature. I like these cards. Like, I like this kind of effect. When it's a 1-mana 1/1, when it dies, the thing gets -1/-1 until end of turn. This is much better than that because it leaves the counter. This wears blight counters well. It trades with a 2-toughness creature. It has a good type. I think this card's going to be really good. And one that I'm just curious about, Moonglove Extractor. 2 and a black for a 2/1 elf warlock. Whenever this creature attacks, you draw a card and lose a life. It's got types. It plays really well with your death touch lifelink trick that then
really
leave around a 2/2. Like, if this ever gets multiple attacks.
How is it ever getting multiple attacks? It's a 2/1/3 drop. I guess maybe your opponent's stuck or whatever. The thing that is nice is it's definitely going to go to the graveyard, hopefully trades with something on the way and cantrips. I agree. I am curious about that one.
That's the thing is, like, they don't have to have a 3-toughness creature in play. So, like, this might just trade, and they have to trade with it. I can't let this get multiple attacks.
How did I not love this card? I love a Scroll Thief.
I know you love this effect, but this is better than a Scroll Thief because it doesn't have to connect.
Yeah, that seems like a miss from me.
I think that's a miss. That's demerits for you, I think.
I agree.
Okay, black uncommons in the number one spot, the aforementioned Shapeshifter Changelings. Nameless Inversion is a reprint. It says 1 and a black for a kindred instant shapeshifter. It has every creature type. Target creature gets +3/-3 and loses all creature types until end of turn. I think this is a banger removal spell. It does a ton. And potentially, if you got a 4-toughness creature, it could be Lava Spike. Could deal 3 extra damage on combat.
Could be Lava Spike. It's also going to be an elf in your graveyard for the elves deck.
Yes.
Oh, this card does it all.
Grave Shifter is my number 2. 3 and a black for a 2/2 shapeshifter with changeling. When it enters, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
So I think that's another interesting thing to dial into, because I think from hearing you talk about Changeling, I think I am slightly lower on Changeling as a thing than you are. I think it's good. I think it's all upside. I just don't know that I think about it as quite as good as, for example, Lesson from Avatar. And I feel like you're viewing it on par with that.
I think it's better. That,
Bet or better.
I think it's better than Lesson as a type.
Okay.
Because
it's just going to make small incidental synergies happen.
And it's going to just make your life easier. Like, it's going to make your life easier in draft. It's going to make your life easier in deck building. It's going to make your life easier in the game, I think.
Yeah, that's a good take.
And then my third is Gnarlbark Elm. 2 and a black for a 3/4 tree folk warlock that enters with 2/-1/-1 counters on it. So 3 mana for a 1/2, yikes. But you can pay 2 and a black, remove 2 counters from this creature. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery. Hello, Blight Payoff.
Yeah, that card's quite good. That also made my list in the number 3 slot. Nameless Inversion was also my number 1. I had a different number 2, which is Creekwood Safe Right. I really like these cycle of creatures. There's kind of creatures like this in every color. This is 1 and a black for an uncommon 5/5. Yes, you heard that right. But this creature enters with 3/-1/-1 counters on it. At the beginning of your end step, if there's an elf card in your graveyard and this creature has a -1/-1 counter on it, remove a -1/-1 counter from this creature. It's going to potentially be a place to dump blight counters. It's also just Tarmogoyf for 2 mana. Like, it's very, very strong, I think.
Yeah. 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 I like that card. It was hard picking the, like, I feel like you were bolder, like the Kithkin enchantment as your number 1 white common. I feel like you were bolder at picking cards that were like, this only goes in one deck, but it's going to be an ace in this one deck. And I was, I think, trying to play it a little safer with cards that are going to go in multiple decks as my top uncommons.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. Takes us on to red. What thoughts do you have on red?
Again, I feel like red has gotten the short end of the straw in the play booster era mostly, but I am also, again, trying to temper my, I wasn't high enough on red for Avatar. I wasn't high enough on red for Tarkir Dragonstorm. So I'm trying to not miss here. But red is tough for me to wrap my head around. I said primary goblins, secondary elementals. Like, hard to not say secondary elementals here. And I could even see primary being elementals because I feel like if elementals isn't as bad as we think it is, then that's like, it's like, oh, that unlocks like 6 great red cards.
Correct.
But I'm sort of looking at those 6 red cards as like, is this good enough? So that's where I'm at right now with red as primary goblins, secondary elementals, and then tertiary, I said vivid, because it has fixing, hybrids, and a suite of removal for the game to go long. But I want to touch in on those removal spells because I have questions about all of them. And the uniting factor I said was interaction, question mark. Like white, it feels like it has 3 distinct lanes and not a lot of overlap between them.
Yeah, I think I have some similar questions. A thing that stood out to me was that red looks a lot mid-rangier than usual to me at common. Mm. It's had some beefier creatures, looked a little bit on the slower side. And it doesn't look quite as deep as some of the other colors at uncommon, but I do think its top 4 or 5 uncommons are still truly excellent.
Yes.
I don't love the look of red green as a deck. It just doesn't look like a deck. So maybe it's all just teamer vivid. That's kind of what I assume.
Yes, that's what I think.
But again, jury's out for me on how that all is gonna play out.
There's Cinder Strike, which is single red for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast the spell, you may blight 1. It deals 2 damage to target creature. It deals 4 damage to that creature instead of the spell's additional cost was paid. The single red or the single mana deal 2 or single mana -2/-2 effects that we see are significantly worse when they're sorcery speed because they don't let you steal the play back when you're on the draw. They don't let you go, I have 1 mana, my opponent plays their 2 drop, and I pick it off.
Correct.
So I am knocking Cinder Strike for that purpose.
Can I rebuttal?
Please, that's what I want. I need you to talk me up on these cards, I think.
I think Cinder Strike's absurd. Like,
okay.
Because this does have the Grim Bauble problem, but it solves the Grim Bauble problem in that it can still kill bigger things. Like, Grim Bauble couldn't take the playback, but it also couldn't kill bigger things. Cinder Strike
can
and is hyper efficient, and presumably you can turn Blight 1 into upside in the Mardu colors pretty easily. And Blight 1 isn't that big of a cost to pay for a deck that's not turning Blight 1 into upside. I think Cinder Strike looks incredible.
Yeah. So Hex Gold Slash is one of the cards this makes me think of, which was the single red burn spell from Phyrexia. All will be one, dealt two. It was an instant single red, deal two, but it dealt four if the thing had toxic. And being able to pick off just whatever, a four drop, a five drop for one mana was absolutely backbreaking. And this doesn't have, like, this is sorcery speed and you have to blight. But you can, it doesn't have to be a toxic creature. It could be any creature in the format.
Any creature in the format. And also might be you get to blight. It might not be you have to blight.
Okay. I'm sold on Cinderstrike. It's in my top commons list. Conversation over about that card. Next is Tweeze. Two in a red instant. Deal three damage to any target. You may discard a card if you do draw a card.
I left this out. I don't think this gets there. I think this is worse than either of the other two removal spells, and as such, like, I think you'll be fine to play it, but I don't think it is anything special. I think it is too clunky, too poorly costed, and it's not four mana value for the elementals thing. Like, it's just, it's all at all of the wrong intersections for me.
And like, it's reminiscent to me, you were higher on Bombard in EOE than I was. That was the three mana deal for, but I felt like that was sort of a no man's land of like, yeah, you can maybe get even on mana, but it doesn't kill the biggest things, and you're trading down on mana for the smaller things. And that's how I feel about Tweeze.
I agree. I don't love Tweeze.
Okay, Feed the Flames is the third red common removal spell. Three in a red, instant, deals five damage to target creature. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead.
This great.
Just kills, it's mostly just murder. Is that what you think?
I think this is a good card at the right mana cost for the Elementals deck, assuming that matters. It exiles. I think this is a premium removal spell, bread and butter.
And this is in your notable commons list?
In my notable commons. It and Cinderstrike, yes.
But Cinderstrike better than Feed the Flames for you? Yes or no?
I think so, yes. Cinderstrike number one for me.
I'm definitely sold on Cinderstrike and definitely fine with Tweeze being out. Feed the Flames, yeah, I could see it. I see it. Okay, good talk. Well, any other red cards that made your notable list?
Yes. Brambleback Brute, which is two in a red for a 4/5, enters with two -1/-1 counters on it, and you can pay one in a red, remove a counter from this creature. Target creature can't block this turn. Activate only as a sorcery. I think this is going to be the neighborhood bully.
Yep. I also have this on my list.
Looks real strong.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. But and to your point about red mid-range, like, this is mid-range with a capital M.
But like, mid-range that hits hard. This is going to come down as, what, a 2-3?
A 2-3.
Right? Which is a respectable stat line. But this is like, this does the thing that I love about Scroll Thief too, which is like, it kind of forces your opponent to race. And maybe they don't want to. Like, I think this has an outsized effect on the game for what looks like just a ho-hum three-drop common type creature. Okay, that takes us on to, I guess, some red sleeper commons. I have some red sleeper commons also.
Okay.
Burning Curiosity, two in a red for a sorcery, has an additional cost to cast it. You can blight one, and you exile the top two cards of your library. If the spell's additional cost was paid, exile the top three cards instead. Until end of your next turn, you may play those cards.
Mid-range.
Mid-range. And I think Mardu Blight decks, this looks really good to me.
This gives Mardu Blight a divination.
Yes.
I mean, not actually divination, because you can't cast it on turn three. I mean,
Ancestral. Gives them Ancestral.
It does give them kind of Ancestral in the late game, yeah. We both gave this a diminishing returns grade, which is notable. That, like, that means we think red decks are going to really like the first copy, and then the second copy gets a lot worse.
Yeah, that's my only sleeper red common.
And I do want to shout out the basic land cyclers that are both in blue and red, which is we've got Kolroth Zealot, five in a red for a 6/5. When it enters, exile the top card of your library until the end of your next turn. You may play that card, but it has basic land cycling for one in a red. And there's not a full cycle of this. There's just a red creature and a blue creature that do this as a nod, I think, to the Vivid decks. And so that means that you can pay one in a red to discard it to search for any basic land card, put it into your hand. I don't think, like, these big clunky, like, the two mana land cyclers largely don't matter. Like, paying two mana to land cycle, I still think is mostly, like, a pretty bad play. But the fact that this can find anything and fix and whatever and is effectively a 2-for-1 on the front side, it's all a card that I have eyes on.
Yeah, I do like that red one for sure.
Okay, red uncommons. In the number one spot, I actually kind of want to make an, I'll stick with it. In the number one spot, I have Seer. One in red instant, deal four to target creature, planeswalker. Just good, clean removal. I almost want to audible and switch and put my number two as my number one, which is Sour Bread Auntie. Two red for a 4/3 goblin warrior. When it enters, you may blight two. If you do, create 2/1/1 black and red goblin creature tokens. So like, just on its face, this is three bodies. You get a 4 mana for a 2/1 and 2/1/1s. But if you like, if you have something to dump counters on and you're getting a 4 mana 4/3 and 2/1/1s and the blight is upside because you're putting the counters on something else, like, boy, howdy, is this card a house.
I think you should make that audible. I think Sour Bread Auntie is nuts.
It's pushed, right? The card's
it's
good.
Pushed.
And then my number three is Warren Torchmaster, which is one and a red for a 2/2 goblin warrior. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may blight one. When you do, target creature gains haste until end of turn. Again, if we're thinking like one, just on face, this is a good aggressive card. And, you know, having that modality of a thing can get haste if you put a -1/-1 counter on it, or put a -1/-1 counter on something else that doesn't have attacks. Like, this can wear a counter at least once. But like, again, if blight is upside and this is free blight every turn,
what's not to like? Yeah. And I think we have the same three here as a nod to Red's uncommons really being top heavy. Like, they're, it's pretty obvious which ones are good. And then they fall off a bit after that. I have them in a different order. I have Torchmaster one, the Auntie two. I almost think I kind of want to switch that also. And
you
make
have Torchmaster one. Yeah, I think Auntie's better than Torchmaster.
Torchmaster's so sick. So good.
Auntie's so good.
They're both so good. Yeah. I think Seer is definitely in third. I feel confident about that take.
All of the cards we're talking about are engines. All the cards we like are like, man, if this really gets going, like,
it's gonna go.
So then you need to kill the things.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
Seer kills the things. Yeah. Okay, green. What do you got going on with green?
Green, get some banger. Four drops at common.
Yeah.
Very well statted creatures, and it's got Midnight Tilling to find the bombs and the graveyard synergy, which is, I should read Midnight Tilling. It's like the, well, I can't think of the name of these.
Cash grab.
Malevolent
Rumble,
you.
Yeah.
That was the one I was trying to think of, Malevolent Rumble. So it's one and a green for an instant, mill four cards, and you can return a permanent card from among them to your hand. That's in my top commons.
Just to dial in on that card in particular, like, Malevolent Rumble gave you an 0/1. Cash Grab potentially gave you a food. This doesn't give you anything. I feel like that's sort of the hallmark for these effects being pushed over the top. Do you feel like this is just good on its own without
that? This is giving you elves in your graveyard, plus finding your elf payoffs. I think this is an elves-only card, but I think it's going to be very good in the elves deck.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I gave green primary elves, secondary Kithkin, tertiary Vivid, and the uniting factor is large in all caps. Because not only does green do a good job, as you're talking about, like, being like doing what we like green to do, which is like give you great rate cards at 4 mana and 5 mana that outclass the other big
colors cards, yeah.
Other colors cards at those costs. But also its early plays are like, I'm a 2/2. But I'll be a 5/5 in three turns if you want me to. Or like the Kithkin stuff that's like, as you cast Kithkin, I'm getting bigger and bigger. And so it's not only getting big stuff at the higher mana value, but it's also getting big stuff that grows as the game progresses.
All right, it's top commons. So Midnight Tilling was on my list. I could cut that one. Safe Right Cavalry. This is 3 and a green for a common 4/4. Can't be blocked by more than one creature. And you can pay 5 to give target elf you control +2/+2 until end of turn.
I like that card. It did not make my list.
It's going to make combat a nightmare, much like that Kithkin uncommon.
Yeah.
You're just going to be swinging out and your opponent's not going to know where you're putting +2/+2.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Safe Flight.
A hefty
cavalry.
Cost, though.
Hefty cost, but threat of activation.
I know, but like, yeah. I mean, maybe that's more the times where you're like, you go to do it and you're like, I have threat of activation. And I go, cool, bet. And then I have a removal spell to respond to your activation. That's a huge tempo swing. But I guess that's just a point of like, pick your spots for those decisions.
Sure. Next up, Mist Meadow Council. 4 and a green for a 4/3 common. Costs 1 less to cast if you control a Kithkin or a Changeling. And when this creature enters, draw a card.
Hello, Assault Road Pack Beast.
Yeah, that card is real strong.
I think that's just good. Like, I don't think you need to be Kithkins. And also, it's another card that's, like, so good if you're thinking about Changelings the way I am, or thinking about these party decks the way I am, where it's like, you don't need to be all in on Kithkin, but if you just got one little buddy, this being 4 mana is huge.
Correct. Those are my green cards on the top commons.
I have a couple others to shout out. Great Forest Druid. It's 1 and a green for an 0/4 Treefolk Druid, and it taps to add a mana of any color. I think this is really going to be... I think this is just good to your... Because to your point of... green has banger 4 mana and 5 mana plays.
Just to ramp into them, yeah.
Getting them a turn sooner is good. This wears blight counters like nobody's business as a 4 toughness creature. So it sort of solves the problem of what do I do with my mana dork in the late game when it's done its job. And also it's like Birds of Paradise for the Vivid decks.
Yeah, I like that show.
On the flip side, I have Crossroads Watcher. It's just 2 and a green for a 3/3 Kithkin Ranger with trample. And whenever another creature you control enters, this creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn. This is, I think, just a functional reprint, except it's a Kithkin, not an elf, of a card that I really liked. I think it was kind of the top green common in Foundations. And I think this is like, this is a huge problem. You have to block it. And if I have a trick or a way to protect it or a way to kill your blocker, like just pushes a ton of damage.
Yeah, I like that card as well.
Yeah. Green Uncommons, what do you got?
Green Uncommons, number one slot. What a card. Pummeler for Hire.
I knew it. I knew you were going to do this.
But you don't like this card?
No, I do. This was my number one. I did bump it down, but this card's incredible.
Yeah, Hire some giant mercenaries. This is 4 and a green for a 4/4 Uncommon. Vigilance, Reach, Ward 2. And when it enters, you gain X life, where X is the greatest power among giants you control. So you're gaining 4 life. This card is beautiful.
Yep.
Number 2, I've got Pitiless Fists. This is 3 and a green for an enchantment aura, enchant creature you control. When this aura enters, enchanted creature fights up to 1 target creature an opponent controls. An enchanted creature gets +2/+2.
Yep, I love that card as well.
And in the number 3 slot, I've got Morkant's Eyes, which is 1 and a green for a kindred enchantment elf. Uncommon. At the beginning of your upkeep, surveil 1, 4GG, sacrifice it, create X, 2/2, black and green, untapped elf creature tokens, where X is the number of elf cards in your graveyard. Activate my guy. As a sorcery.
is there a spider spawning variant in the format? If so, I will put in my top uncommons.
I am there.
I had your number one and your number two as my number one and my number two. And then I bumped them both down in place of my number one. Is Blossoming Defense. Single green for an instant. Target creature you control gets +2/+2 and gains hexproof until end of turn. I think this is gonna be the best green uncommon. This, like, being like, in my, if how I'm thinking about the format of like, there's lots of engines, there's lots of key cards for strategies. Killing them is important, then as important is protecting them. And Blossoming Defense is going to help you keep your engines running.
Except the thing I want to push back on that is I don't think green does that nearly as well as like white, for example, or blue. Like, I guess it's in Kithkin. It's going to be really good at protecting
Kithkin. Elves and Vivid are all interested in protect. Every deck wants to play to the board and keep it that way.
Any colorless cards cracking the notable commons or the sleeper commons for you?
I have one multicolor and one colorless card. My colorless card is the titular card of the episode, Changeling Wayfinder, the 3-mana 1/2 changeling that finds a basic when it comes into play. And I have Marrow Skyswimmer, which is 3 Azorius for a 2/2 merfolk soldier with convoke. It has flying and vigilance. And when it enters, you make a 1/1 white and blue merfolk creature token.
Yeah, this card is absurd. This is what I want from my thing that makes multiple bodies. Flying, vigilance, convoke. Give me all that. Both of those were in my notable commons. I do have some other sleeper commons to shout. One first up is Foraging Wicker Maw, which is 2 colorless for a 1/3. When it enters, surveil 1, and you can filter a mana through it. while making this creature the color of the mana that you filtered through it.
Yeah, no shortage of golden egg nominees from this format, I would say.
Yeah, this creature's cool.
This creature is very cool. I love a two mana thing that smooths your draws or gives you some card selection, whatever, like Surveil, Scry, Loot, Rummage, whatever. And I think this is going to be a real key for the Vivid decks for sure. And I think not a lot of other decks are going to want it.
I agree. Yes. Stalactite Dagger is up next. Two mana for an equipment. When it enters, create a 1/1 colorless shapeshifter creature token with Changeling. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 with all creature types. And an equip cost of 2. I did see some scuttle in the Lords of Limited Discord poo-pooing this, and I say to you, how dare you, honestly? This card looks excellent to me.
Yeah, it's interesting in the world of, like, Kyoshi Battle Fan or whatever the colorless one from Final Fantasy
is. +1/+1.
It doesn't auto-equip, though. So you're not getting a 2-mana 2-2.
You're not getting a 2-2. Okay, I like this a lot less. I didn't realize that about it.
Getting
okay.
a 2-mana 1-1 and then the equipment. But I do think that getting a 2-mana... like, 2-mana 1-1 shapeshifter, I think, is good.
I thought it auto-equipped. I'm much more of a sleeper common on it than I am closer to it being a top common, realizing that it doesn't auto-equip.
Yeah.
I have a few multicolored... uncommons to shout as well. Chaos Spewer, which is 2 in Rakdos for a 5/4 common. When it enters, you can pay 2. If you don't, Blight 2. I just like that this can potentially be Blight upside. Like, you're maybe going to be getting a 3-mana 5/4 plus 2-1/-1 counter somewhere that you care about.
Yeah,
that's got huge potential. Mischievous Sneakling, 1 and Demir for a 2/2 Changeling with Flash. Looks great in the blue-black deck, and I think is going to do some work smoothing out some of your other stuff like you're talking about. And then Wary Farmer, which is 1 Sleznia Sleznia for a 3/3. At the beginning of your end step, if another creature entered the battlefield under your control this turn, Surveil 1. It's going to help keep the gas flowing in the old Kithkin deck.
Prideful Feastling, I think, should be out there as well. It's 2 and Orzhov for a 2/3 shapeshifter. So it's a Changeling with lifelink. I think the single pipped, like the one you should, the Demir one as well, the single pipped hybrid Changelings are just like, the glue of gold. This goes in many decks. It counts as 2 colors for a Vivid. It counts as all creature types. Like, those cards seem good to me. But I've got many wolves inside of me as I'm wrestling with. I have over-indexed in the past of, like, I want to bump up the cards that go in multiple things because they let me delay the decision and they and it's like, nah, just pick the good cards. Just pick the cards with my ceilings.
Just pick the Kithkin cards that go in the great Kithkin deck. Don't correct. Delay the decision. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So, but I think Prideful Feastling is nice. It's also 3-mana 2/3, so it's going to wear some blight counters and stick around. Yada, yada. I like that card.
Multicolored uncommons that stand out for me. Number 1, putting my money where my mouth is, Thoughtweft Lieutenant. Green, white for an uncommon 2/2. When this creature or another Kithkin you control enters, target creature you control gets +1/+1 and gains trample until end of turn.
Yeah, I like that card a lot.
I think that card's going to hit like a freight train, and I hope the Kithkin deck is as good as I think it is. I could see it getting too easily disrupted by removal. Like, I think that is going to be a problem for the Kithkin deck, but all signs point to there are a lot of Kithkin cards that care about a lot of other Kithkin cards.
Right. I don't think it's a, like, it's not a glass house. Like, Kithkin is not, doesn't feel like a, well, if you kill the Lord, the deck crumbles.
Correct.
So I don't think it's going to have that problem.
In the number 2 slot, I've got Reaping Willow. 1 Orzhov, Orzhov, Orzhov for our 3/6 lifelink that enters with 2-1/-1 counters. And then you can pay 1 and an Orzhov, remove 2 counters to return target creature card, mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, that card is that's the number 1 in my heart.
And then I followed up with the other 2 lords. So in the number 3 slot, I've got the Merfolk Lord, Deep Channel Duelist, white blue for a 2/2. At the beginning of your end step, untap a Merfolk and other Merfolk get +1/+1. And in the number 4 slot, my honorable mention slot, I've got Morkan's Loyalist, one black green for a 3/2. Elves you control get +1/+1. And when this dies, you can return an elf card from your graveyard to your hand. Notably, you're going to be able to loop these if you get multiple of them. Honestly, I do think the top three multicolored uncommons should probably be, it should be the three lords, but I just put Reaping Willow in there because I love Reaping Willow. Yeah.
That's the thing is like, that's how I feel is like the top three is probably the three lords, but that feels boring to me. So I wanted to shout out a couple other cards. There is this cycle of hybrid cards that impulse four and let you reveal either a card that is a creature type from among them that is of that, you know, color pairs type, or a land from among them. And the one that's two mana, like most of them are three mana, this one is two and it's incredible. Eclipsed Kithkin is Selesnya for a 2/1. When it enters, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal a Kithkin, forest, or plains card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. I think this being two mana makes the land part of this equation way more exciting than the three mana ones that can find lands.
Correct.
Like, having two mana and this in your opener is just like, oh, amazing. I know I'm going to get to hit my third land drop. But then also, like, this finds Kithkin, but it also finds Changelings. It also finds Nameless Inversion. Like, these cards are good, I think. So I just wanted to shout out that cycle, but I think the Selesnya 2 drop, as if Kithkin needed it, like, is just going to be really good. And a card that I think is going to be sneaky good is Noggle Robber. The one Gruul 3/3. When it enters or dies, makes a treasure. I think this is very Vivid coded, and it's going to tie the room together for the Vivid decks really well, with it being a 3-mana 3/3, it being two colors itself, it giving you a treasure twice. I think it's going to be real good. I want to talk about color rankings before we wrap up here.
Okay.
White, I feel like, as you shouted out, you're like white, green, and white, blue. And I see that. I think Kithkin and Merfolk are great decks. White's commons, and maybe this just doesn't matter, and I should go back to both of our format truths about the uncommons are bangers and some commons are good and the rest are situational. White's commons don't excite me that much, and that has me not wanting to get into white from jump.
I feel like that might be leveling yourself a little bit. I think, I mean, obviously way too early to say, haven't even looked at a generated pack yet, but my guess is that this is not going to be like an Edge of Eternity situation where the packs dry up. Like, there's a lot of really good cards at uncommon and common.
It's interesting because I feel like, this is, again, pure speculation, but what else are we doing here, is that it's not that the packs are going to dry up necessarily, but if you're not in the right lane, like,
it's going to be like, rough. Yes. If you're drafting elves and the person passing you is drafting elves, that's going to be a rough go.
If that tier of common, I feel like the tier of commons that is goes in one deck.
Mm-hmm.
If you're seeing cards that are going in one deck, pick 7, 8 wheel, and you're not in that deck.
Yes.
You're in trouble.
I agree.
So I'm like trying to position myself to be in spots where I can capitalize on that the most. And that makes me want to take cards and colors that I feel like have more of a spread. And those are the Sultai colors for me currently.
Okay.
That's right. Like, and it's not that I think like blue, black, blue, green, and black, green are going to be the best decks, though I do have pretty big eyes for black, green, and blue, black. But like, those are the colors that I do feel like are going to give me the most pivot points. Whereas I feel like white is a color where you're going to be like, take Kithkin card, or take Merfolk card, and hold on for dear life. Whereas I feel like the blue and the black and the green cards are going to let me say, take blue cards, they go in good blue decks. Take black cards, they go in good black decks. And then I can figure it out.
Except the thing I want to push back on that is I love white blighting as well. So if you start, like, blight's going to be such a good off ramp. Like, so you start Kithkin, and you get pushed off Kithkin. Like, you should, it's like cycling in Ikoria, right? Like, I loved red in Ikoria because you could try to toe the line, try to push your way into cycling. And if you got pushed out of it, you still had this great fallback of, okay, let me be blue-red Forbidden Friendship spells, or let me be like all these red cards work together. Let me be a red synergy deck. I think white has Blight as this really good fallback deck.
But the cards that you're, if you are starting your draft with Kithkin card, and again, I'm not saying I'm not going to take like whatever, this is an ace in a Kithkin deck. I'm not taking those early. I think I will, but it's not like when I pivot into Blight, those cards are good in the Blight version of white necessarily.
Correct. But I think what I'm trying to say is I feel like you're knocking white for saying like, well, it's only got these one or two lanes. And so you're going to have to hold on for dear life. Like, I think you're framing white as high risk, high reward. Mm-hmm. And I think it's high reward without taking on that much risk is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Yeah. I think high risk, high reward is exactly how I feel about white. That is a good way to frame it. And so maybe I'll just try and keep that in check as we get into our first drafts of the format, which we're going to get to do on Wednesday. Thanks, sir.
Going to get
access
to do on Wednesday. And I'm actually going to get a pre-release, which is sweet. So going up to the band directors convention in Fort Wayne. So if anybody's in Fort Wayne, I'm looking for an LGS rec. I'm going to be driving the old Jasper Wildcats minibus to the parking lot, rolling up in style and drafting wow. some Lorwyn Eclipsed.
Let's go. Will you bring any of your students with you?
No, they have obligations in honor bands. I mean, that's why those are the minibus. I am driving them to Fort Wayne, but they will be rehearsing and I will be playing some Magic the Gathering.
Love to see it.
I don't think I've gone to, I've not been very professionally developed at our professional development concert or whatever weekend conference. That's the word I was looking for. I just schmooze and go do other things.
Yeah. Look, we're happy to have you pre-releasing. I'm not mad about it.
I think that the format is way more than tribal. Like, I think it's easy to look at this format and dismiss it as, oh, this is going to be a less interesting format because it's the five typal decks. I think Blight and hopefully Vivid adds a lot of depth. And I think takes away a lot of what people didn't like about Ixalan, which is like, well, I'm going to take Pirates and I'm going to hope Pirates is open. I think there's a lot of really good ways to, if you start Kithkin and get pushed off it, still have a great white deck. Or if you start Elves and get pushed off Elves, still have a great black deck, or etc. Do you know what I mean?
I
see that, and I think that is very appealing to me about the format.
I think there's still, for me, I don't run a down note, but I do think that the prevailing thing will still be that, like, in on the best of one ladder, you're just going to be like, oh my god, another nuts Kithkin deck, another nuts Merfolk deck, another nuts whatever deck. I think that's more the sort of, sorry to do this dad thing, but the blight on the format will be
maybe. But then we get to follow our 2026 New Year's resolutions and play more best of three.
There it is. Love
and
that.
On that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There is links to our Patreon page, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our merch, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.